Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I am Heath Mulliken.
And I am Mark Whitman.
And today we...
The man of the hour, the man with the power.
Too sweet to be sour.
Too sweet to be sour. If you can't dig this mess, you at the wrong address.
Why, everybody's in the back laughing and joking, the dreams out front, cooking and a smoke. I probably just blew that line. That's it.
That's how the line goes.
So if you're listening to this, you know for the last several weeks we have been talking.
I am the hit maker, the record breaker. 275 pounds.
Little plumber son, come out that ditch and
to be so sweet.
We've been talking about the American dream, Dusty Rhodes, and we're going to kind of bring that conversation to a close today. We've covered his career from his time with Dick Murdoch, Texas Outlaws, his time in Florida, to his time in Jim Crockett. We kind of finished up the last show talking about Starrcade 87 when he won the U.S. title from Lex Luger. And so we want to talk about, just some final thoughts on 87. Then we get into 88, where everything changes.
Yes.
And something happens that we never thought would happen. That's Dusty leaving the NWA. So, Mark, you mentioned very briefly, and we talked about on other episodes before, the Dusty finish of Starrcade 87 when the Road Warriors supposedly won the belts from Telly Blanchard and Arn Anderson.
Right. And they did. It was a classic Dusty finish. I mean, the Road Warriors win the belt in their working hometown of Chicago, and then the referee reverses the decision that night, and they give the titles back to Arn and Tully. And it was one time too many.
Yeah.
Like that time, because it had been built up for the Road Warriors to win the title. They were in their hometown. Yeah. And it was just one time too many with the Dusty finish.
And I think also there's been
lots. Which was a genius finish. And it's not like he gets a lot of credit because he's the one that used it. But that finish, he learned from Eddie Graham.
Right.
And there's no telling who Eddie Graham learned that finish from.
Right.
And it was a great finish on the house show because the point was I wanted to see my guy win the title and he got cheated out of it again. Yeah. And I'll come back next time because he should have won the title.
Yeah.
And it's fine for when you travel around and there's no internet and you go from territory to territory and you can do that. But when it's on a pay-per-view or a closed circuit like it was back then, you just can't do that every. And there were times they were doing it two or three times a show.
Yeah.
Not just every major show it was happening once. There were times they would do the house show circuit and it would happen three or four times. To protect everybody.
Yeah.
So this idea that people have nowadays, even where there's these unfulfilling finishes and matches, it's been around for years.
Right.
It's just
welcome to wrestling.
Everything wasn't on television.
Yeah.
So you didn't see all these unfulfilling finishes.
Yeah. And that whole 87, you've got the Survivor Series getting kicked off.
Right.
Which hurt Starrcade's pay-per-view numbers. Starrcade's already hurting because they've pretty much alienated the South because they've moved the show to Chicago instead of Greensboro or Atlanta.
Right. And very importantly, Vince McMahon going to the cable company and saying, if you carry Starrcade, you don't get to carry Survivor Series.
Yeah. And if you don't get Survivor Series, you don't get WrestleMania
in
88. Right. So some people would call that dirty pool. The man is still in business. So it's obviously a pretty good business decision. And listen, just because somebody plays hardball better than you, don't player hate. Congratulations.
Well, they actually came back with Clash of the Champions.
Well, you're right.
And, I mean, that was another Dusty idea. I mean, doing the Clash of Champions on free TV the same night as I think it was WrestleMania. They offered it.
WrestleMania 4.
And did a big number for TBS to see Flair versus Sting for the first time on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a good move.
So we finish up, and I think for me, everything we just mentioned was this perfect storm from the Dusty finish to being in Chicago to McMahon's involvement. This perfect storm where things are getting shaky for Crockett Promotions, the NWA.
Right.
And then we get into 1988, and Dusty, talk a little bit about you, kind of Dusty. What's going on with him in '88?
Well, there's the stories of them We drove up to Charlotte the other week, and we know how long it took to drive from Anderson to Charlotte, which was about an hour and without the traffic, an hour and 15, not even an hour and a half. Wouldn't you agree, Matt? Pretty close. I mean,
yeah, we were on the south side of Charlotte.
We're on the south side of Charlotte, but still, Anderson to Charlotte, more than an hour and a half. And there's the stories of them going from Charlotte to Spartanburg. Spartanburg is 45 minutes or less from Charlotte and jumping on a private plane to make that flight.
Wow.
It would take them longer to get to the airport and get on the plane than it would have taken them to drive down to Spartanburg for the shows. So there was just burning through money. And there's the famous story of the accountant walking in with a white face and telling Jim Crockett, we're $5 million in the hole.
Yeah.
They had gotten worked into buying the UWF.
Yeah.
Where Bill Watts leveraged a fake offer from Vince McMahon to drive the price up.
Yeah.
And their idea was that they would expand west, and they opened up an office in Texas.
Yeah.
Where there was no reason.
Where Watts's office was kind of part of the deal is if you buy the UWF, you get this as part of your deal, correct?
Right. And they spent a lot of money moving things out there. When they would run shows on the West Coast, they would station themselves out of Las Vegas, and they would fly out every day to where the show was at and then fly back and party all night in Las Vegas, get up the next day, go to the next show, fly back, and they were using these private jets.
Yeah.
When they could have been making the drive.
Right.
And
saved
a lot of money. And there's the famous story of the accountant walking in and saying, we're $5 million in the hole.
Yeah.
Because the spending was out of control. They were spending money that they weren't getting back. And the reason that they weren't getting it back is, listen, I love Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think he gets too much of the blame.
Right.
For Crockett having to sell to Turner.
Yeah.
But he also doesn't accept enough of the blame. Because I read his book and I've heard him talk about it, and he doesn't think he did anything wrong.
Yeah.
But he was the head booker,
yeah,
and he was the one that was making some bad booking decisions at the time. And it's a thing, we've talked about it before, you see with every great wrestling mind, eventually they run out of ideas and they start doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Vern Gagne was a powerhouse.
Yes.
And the AWA was a huge territory, and it went out of business because Vern Gagne didn't know it. He didn't trust anybody else but his gangly little son.
Right.
The Sheik, who was the greatest, maybe the greatest heel of all time.
Yeah.
Who ran the only successful territory with a heel on top where he would run the babyface out of town.
Yeah.
Who would even consider that could work? But the Sheik made it work until it didn't work anymore.
Yeah.
I think WWE right now, you see Vince McMahon, when his fingerprints are on things, he's doing the thing that's always worked for him.
Yeah.
The ratings dropped a little bit, and what is the first thing they did? They put John Cena right back in the main event. Because that's what's worked.
Yeah.
Instead of weathering the storm.
Yeah.
And going and building your new guys, you fall right back on putting John Cena in the main event, and it did bump the numbers up a little bit, but I don't know for how long.
So let me. Okay. So I don't want to get too far off, but so let's talk about that. We have a fly that is turned heel on us, and it'll mess with Mark, and then it'll mess with me, and. We're trying to end his career.
And it is throwing me off.
Yeah.
He's the Sheik of the fly world.
But so Cena goes against Cesaro.
Uh-huh.
This match, I have not seen it yet.
Oh, it's a really
rave
good
match. Reviews all over.
Yeah.
And I think I
don't know. I'm more curious what it does for Cesaro.
Yes.
Does it
because
really
to
elevate
me,
Cesaro? And that's my whole thing with the John Cena thing. Who's really being elevated in John Cena putting all these guys over? Because it seems like John Cena is still the one getting elevated from it.
Right.
Like, at first I thought this is great because Adrian Neville come out and he did his thing. But what's he doing now?
But who, who they've got to get Cesaro over with is the dad bringing his kids.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know if you said, hey, have you watched Ring of Honor? He's like, yeah, I got my wife a ring. You know,
right? Who, if you say, do you know who Claudio Castagnoli is? They have no idea.
No, that's right.
You know who the All Night Express are, or the Kings of Wrestling? I'm sorry, the Kings of Wrestling. Nope.
No,
I have no idea who those guys are.
Yeah, and so Cesaro's over with
with you and me.
Right. Cesaro's over.
Right. And guys like us.
But he's not a draw yet to the casual fan.
No.
If you said to us, hey, Cesaro's going to main event a show in Spartanburg, would dare say, if that was a Saturday you had to work and you had to take an hour off early.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt, I'd do it.
Yeah.
I can go see Cesaro work a main event against John Cena anywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's going to be a good match based on the ones that I've seen on Raw.
Right.
It's going to be a great match.
If you go, Bill Watts, I believe he did an interview on Jim Ross's show, and it talks about a lot of the kind of the downfall of the UWF and things like that. But I think, you know, Dusty, one of his shoot interviews talking about the accountant come in, and he says part of the problem was they went from when they expanded, they did not expand the office staff.
Right.
So you had one guy, one accountant trying to run the books, and it was almost unfair to the guy. You were asking him to do something that he wasn't equipped to do.
Right.
So instead
of he had been an accountant for a small family run business, even though the business and the family was wealthy.
Yes.
Or I don't know, maybe wealthy, but they owned the minor league baseball team. They
diversified.
They promoted Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. Yeah. They promoted Dick Clark's Caravan of Stars. They promoted the Harlem Globetrotters. They promoted boxing. And they had the minor league team. I think they owned a couple of restaurants, but still a family business. And now you're talking about a multinational trying to go anyway.
Yeah.
Definitely a nationally expanding business. They wanted to go worldwide. I think he was not equipped to do that.
Yeah.
But there again, Dusty doesn't take enough blame, but I think he gets more blame than he deserves.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just, he was like Jim Crockett, even Crockett. If you've ever seen the Mid-Atlantic documentary, when they ask him, who do you blame? He said, I blame me because I was the one that should have reined all that in.
Yeah.
He was enamored with Dusty Rhodes, just like everybody is.
And if you think, if you're listening to this and you would say, well, Heath and Mark are idiots and I know more about wrestling than them, then you need to go and listen to the All of Dusty's Men, the thing at FanFest from last year where you had J.J. Dillon, Barry Windham, Magnum T.A., Kevin Sullivan, Tully Blanchard. They're saying everything we're saying. The Dusty either got too much of the blame or not enough of the blame. We're not coming telling you our own theories. We're telling you what other people that were in there say about Dusty Rhodes.
Right.
So this is so Crockett Promotions is in turmoil. But what leads up to him leaving the NWA?
They Turner buys Crockett Promotions, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. Turner purchases him because it's been a big draw for him on TBS. He loves wrestling. He's always made money on wrestling.
Yeah.
And Dusty's they were wanting to scale back Dusty's involvement with things a little bit because people were getting tired of Dusty, not just the fans. The guys backstage were getting tired of Dusty.
Yeah.
And he had this one last ditch effort that he thought, and the declaration had come down, no more blood on the TBS show. Well, they turned the Road Warriors heel on Sting.
Yeah.
And Sting wasn't over enough to turn the Road Warriors. The Road Warriors, they call it the Road Warrior Pop for a reason.
Yeah.
They were over.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody I don't know that's been over like the Road Warriors. Arn talked about it the other night. He talked about how he had goosebumps you could hang a hat off of when the Road Warriors came to the ring.
Yeah.
Because it was such an ovation, and Sting was not over enough at the time that them turning on him. So the idea was they go on the TBS show, Hawk takes the spike off the shoulder pad, and they dig it into Dusty Rhodes' eye.
Yeah.
Blind him, and he gets to be who he's always wanted to be, which is Rooster Cogburn and True Grit. You were talking about seeing True Grit. He gets to come out with an eye patch on.
Yeah.
And he gets to take it, but he was not, even Dusty at that time was not over enough to turn the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. But the eye, and people, you said earlier, well, they told him not to bleed and he got way too much blood and it got him fired.
Right.
eventually. But they did have the match. I mean, they had the match with he and Sting taking on the Road Warriors. The idea that he had was they want to phase me out, and they've told me not to use blood, but if I use blood and then I get into a match with these guys who are guaranteed to draw money, then they'll think that I drew money, and they'll see my worth, and they'll keep me around, and they'll forgive me for the blood because I'll make them so much money.
Yeah. Was the – okay, I remember the build to the Dusty and Sting versus Road Warriors match. Do you remember – I think the Road Warriors were champions at the time, but was that match at Starrcade, or do you – I don't remember
I have not seen that match in years. But I think – it was not a great match. Didn't work.
No.
Because you don't want to – trying to turn the Road Warriors heel didn't work because you want to pull for the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
It's like Brock Lesnar. I know that Brock Lesnar is going to destroy somebody, so I want to pull for him.
Yeah.
I don't want to pull for the wishy-washy guy who may or may not win. I want to pull for the guy that I know is going to kick somebody's ass every single time he gets in the ring. And that was the – they looked at in the era of puffed-up steroid bodies – they looked more like professional wrestlers than anybody else.
Yeah.
That's why Nikita Koloff got over, because he looked like he could have been a Road Warrior.
Yeah. So let me very interesting. Totally agree with what you said.
Well, of course you do. And let me say this to the people that you mentioned earlier, people saying that they know more about wrestling than me or you.
Great.
Good for you.
Yeah, you know what I almost you commented.
I mean, I don't know.
We're referring to that. We're referring to a conversation in our Facebook group, The Wrestling You Grew Up With.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say,
and I'll say it here, you know more about wrestling than me, and 75 cent will get you a cup of coffee.
Hofer did have a point.
Y'all don't work in factories. Yeah. You can still get a cup of coffee for like 50 cents in a factory.
It ain't
good coffee, my friend.
I want my standard comeback to be similar to another guy that was in our group and just be like, you got me.
Yeah.
Oh my, you got me.
Yeah. That was me too. You got me.
The thing with the Road Warriors and the Brock Lesnar is they are believable.
Yes.
They don't have to say a word when
especially
they walk
Hulk.
Out. Yes. Very believable. I believe these guys can kick your butt. I believe they want to kick your butt, and I really don't think they care. What I think. They don't care if I cheer for them or boo them.
Did you see Mick Foley's stand-up special about the network special?
No.
Oh, you should watch it. It's a whole...
I'm sorry.
His hypothesis at the beginning is Brock Lesnar was the perfect guy to end the streak.
Yeah.
And he then uses his story, Mick Foley's story, to tell you why.
Yeah.
And he kind of goes through his career, and he talks about dropping the elbow for the first time and this and that and the other. And he said, but always, everywhere I've gone, it happens. The same thing always happens. Eventually, people look at me and say, wait a minute, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And they say this about Mick Foley. Eventually, they realize that I'm a nice guy, that I'm playing a character.
Yeah.
And they realize that I do care when they boo me, and it does hurt me when they boo me. And he said, and that's why Brock Lesnar's the perfect guy to end the streak, because he's the only one that could take the heat, because he doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He's not a wrestling fan. He's a businessman.
Yeah.
He doesn't care if you like him. He doesn't. Yeah. I've seen the video of him when the girl walks up to him in the airport and says, can I get a picture with you? And he said, not right now. I'm with my family.
Yeah.
I got no problem with
that. Right, right.
By the way. And I think, and I've back to tie it in, I've heard this about Dusty.
Yeah.
That if he was with his family and you walked up and interrupted him, he was going to be rude to you.
Yeah.
And there was a reason he was going to be rude to you. It's because this is not wrestling time.
Yeah.
I'm with my family right now. When I met Dusty Rhodes, he was great.
Because we had paid to be there.
He was being paid to be there, and he did his job. Yeah. I didn't meet Dusty Rhodes when he was sitting there trying to eat supper. I wouldn't do that anyway.
Right.
I don't care who it is. If they're eating supper, I don't want nobody walking up shaking my hand when I'm eating supper.
That happened to us, you know, this morning. We're eating breakfast at Daniel's Diners, and several people came by. I was like, man, you're the guys from the Double Dropkick Show. I'm like, yes, we are. And they said, can we get an autograph? I said, you know, I tell you what. No.
Let me finish my meal.
Yeah.
That's because I, you know, But there again, I've heard that about Dusty. If you interrupted him when he was on family time or on personal time, he was probably not signing autographs or taking pictures.
But the thing about the Road Warriors versus Dusty feud is when Dusty's feuding with Ric Flair, I can believe you.
Right.
I believe that Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair, that's a fair fight. Either one of them can win. I believe Dusty. I believe what he says when he is different Ric Flair. But when you put Dusty versus the Road Warriors, I don't think that's a fair fight. I don't think he's got a chance. I don't believe it. I don't believe anymore.
And that's the draw of the Road Warriors and guys like Brock Lesnar, man. You don't believe that anybody could beat them in a fight.
Yeah.
And therefore, it doesn't work to turn them heel on Dusty Rhodes.
Some guy. We were having – listen, I'm sorry to be making fun of people, but it just must be done.
Don't bother me.
So in our Facebook group, The Wrestling You Grew Up With, we were talking about overrated tag teams or best tag teams of all time. And somebody said that because the Road Warriors lost the AWA titles to Jimmy Garvin and Steve Regal, that dropped them a notch. That you could not put them in the greatest of all time because of that. And I'm like, I'm like, do you know why they lost to them? Because they told them to lose to them and they were moving on.
Right.
And I'm like,
you know, I'm there again. I know that I'm at the minority of wrestling fans, but I do believe it's because I understand the wrestling business.
Yeah.
That it's about making money.
Yeah.
And the Road Warriors were one of the, if not the, definitely in the top two or three money drawing tag teams. They were probably the money drawing tag team of all time.
Oh, I would.
People
without
bought
a
ticket.
Doubt.
Nobody
without
ever
a doubt.
Bought a ticket just to see the Hardy Boys.
Right.
And maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure
if you
there
live
were,
in Cameron,
okay,
North Carolina.
I'm sure there were people that bought WrestleMania because they wanted to see the Hardy Boys match. Because to say that nobody did, somebody's going to come back and say, I did. But there were arenas that would fill up to see a Road Warriors match.
All over the world.
Right.
You mean
Japan?
Japan. Those guys were over
everywhere. People bought tickets specifically to see the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's another tag team that can really make that claim.
I don't know that I've ever said this. When we would go to Greenville, you knew most of the time the handful of guys that were going to be there.
Right.
Once the Road Warriors came to Mid-Atlantic, every time I went to Greenville, I held out a little bit of hope. Maybe the Road Warriors are here tonight. And when I finally got to see them, I had the same goosebumps Arn Anderson did.
See, I've never seen the Road Warriors live. And that's one of my biggest regrets, that I never got to see that Iron Man entrance.
Well, see, that's the thing. In Greenville, they really didn't do the whole – I don't remember if they did the music or not.
Yeah.
But I think I got to see them three times, one at a regular house show, one at – Crockett Cup, 88.
Yeah.
And then at the Great American Bash Show there.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, I've never seen their entrance, and I've never seen Undertaker's entrance. And I was disappointed because I went to Raw and he was supposed to be there.
Oh.
And he wasn't. But I'm hoping that in April of 2016
April the
that
3rd.
I may get to see his final entrance.
Yes.
And it should be awesome. It should be epic in Cowboy Stadium.
Yes, yes.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Listen, yes. I've already let you down when it comes to Fan Fest. I won't fail you when it comes to WrestleMania 32.
I hope so. Anyway.
So it doesn't.
It doesn't work. Crockett doesn't see. There. It's that old wrestler's trick. That old promoter's trick. The Road Warriors are over, so I'll team up with going, and the crowd may show up to see the Road Warriors, but I'll claim responsibility for the crowd.
Yeah,
and it just didn't work. I mean, it didn't get over like they thought it would, and they didn't see Dusty Rhodes as the John Wayne Rooster Cogburn character, and they fired him, and he went to WWF.
So he gets to WWF. And as they did, you got vignettes.
Yep. And some of them were pretty good.
Right.
Right. In hindsight. I mean, it wasn't like it
entertaining.
Went, it wasn't like they tried to remake Dusty Rhodes as a corporate champion. I mean, they still kept the idea behind what he was. He just wasn't the American Dream anymore.
He was
the common man.
Yeah. The elephant in the room is polka dots.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever gotten into the mind of Vince McMahon? I mean, I've not seen in anything I've ever seen. Dusty's talked about it. Everybody else is talking about it. You know, Dusty got it over in a way most people couldn't or wouldn't.
Right.
But I'm just trying to think what's Vince McMahon's going into this meeting with Dusty Rhodes, one of the great wrestling minds of all time, somebody that he admires, somebody that he...
Yeah, but by this time, Dusty Rhodes had been on TV for years saying that the other promotion was the greatest promotion and that he was the biggest attraction in the world. And that if you wanted to see real wrestling, you watched Jim Crockett Promotions. He was Vince's biggest rival at that point.
Right.
He was not a guy that Vince admired. He was Vince's biggest rival.
Right.
And now he's had to come to Vince McMahon hat in hand.
Yes.
And ask for a job.
And you think that's – and the polka dots is like
– oh, without a doubt, it was intended to humble Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes, I'm not
– yeah.
There again. Mark don't walk around telling you
– yes.
Always what I think.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what Dusty Rhodes said in his book. He knew that it was intended to humble him a little bit.
Yeah. And he ran with it.
And he said, okay. He said, if Vince could have put me in a diaper, and I'd have got it over.
Yeah.
And it didn't. He didn't like the polka dots.
Yeah.
But he talked about. He said, I'd always worn ridiculous looking outfits back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And Dusty Rhodes owned his fat body.
Yeah.
He was not. He'd walk out with no shirt on, with his belly hanging out over his trunks, and he'd tell you, my belly's just a little big, my hiney's just a little big. He owned who he was.
Yeah.
And he put those polka dots on, and they were intended. The polka dots. Accentuated his overweightness. They made him look even more overweight than he was.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dusty Rhodes owned it.
Yeah.
And he walked out and he did it anyway. But the biggest issue was, for me, I remember thinking at the time, don't do this to Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even at the time, I was like, why are they putting Dusty in polka dots? This makes absolutely no sense. And why? I can remember there was something that happened where you had Dusty, Arn, Tully, and Barry Windham in this match together, and there was nothing mentioned about it. It was as if this was the first time they'd ever met in a ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody took advantage of the history between them.
Yeah.
And brought it. And I just thought they could have made some money by putting Barry Windham with Dusty Rhodes and having him face Tully and Arn. And that, to me, was money.
Yeah.
But Vince wasn't going to do that because he didn't come up with that. He didn't create that.
I'll be honest. I was still a mark at that time.
At that time.
I was still not smartened up yet. And so when Dusty comes out in polka dots, my reaction is, why would he want to wear polka dots?
Yeah, why would Dusty Rhodes make the decision to wear the polka dots? Yeah. I very, very early on understood what the business was about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always did. And we've talked about it. Like, I always knew this was a match based on spectacle, and this is a match that's, you know, that's good. I knew that Andre and Hogan sold the show, but that Steamboat and Savage had the best match. I understood that from an early age. I just always had that acumen to that
sixth sense, if you will.
And it's just like some people, we've talked about it. You can watch NASCAR for 40 years, and that don't make you a mechanic.
Right.
You can watch wrestling for 40 years. That don't make you an expert on it.
You either
understand things about the business or you don't understand things about the business.
And people,
I always understood them.
And people think they know a lot about wrestling, but what you actually know, you know a lot about the wrestling show that you watch.
Right.
But you don't know a lot about, like you said, the business of wrestling.
Right. I couldn't tell you where all the – I know Starrcade 87 was in Chicago because they call it Chi-Town Heat.
Yes.
I know WrestleMania 1 was at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But I'm not a like, oh, this happened on this date.
Right.
This happened on that. I'm not that guy.
We didn't keep as good of notes as Jim Cornette. No. Now, Dusty, in his time in WWF, he feuds with Million Dollar Man, which that's
a no-brainer.
And then I believe he feuds with Savage. Randy
Honky
Savage.
Honky Tonk Man.
And they bring in Sapphire, and then they do the turn with Sapphire.
Sapphire thing, she was Juanita Wright.
Right.
Who, back in that era, there's a person that I can think of from this area mm-hmm. that every time you go to a wrestling show and she's there, all right. the wrestlers talk about her being there.
Yeah.
And she was the Juanita Wright of Greenville.
Okay.
Where they're at every show. They always sit in the same place.
Yeah.
They might pick wrestlers up from the hotel and bring them to the
Yeah.
People there trust them
yeah.
to do run errands for free.
Right.
Let's face it.
Yeah.
That's what they do. That's what wrestlers do. You find somebody that'll do something for you for free, and you let them do it for you for free.
Yeah.
We used to have a guy, even running indie shows, he loved it, and he would come and hang out, and he would be the guy that we would give money to, and he would go to the store for us.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't leave.
Right.
I was there, and you give him $5 and say, go get me a Mountain Dew and a can of Grizzly Wintergreen.
Yeah.
And then he'd come back, and he would go to the store and get
stuff.
He was happy to do it.
Yeah.
That's what wrestlers do, and Juanita mm-hmm. Wright was that.
Yeah.
And they put her on TV, and she made some good money. And I remember hearing the story that she wasn't even cashing the checks. Dusty had to tell her to go cash the checks.
Right.
Because she was on wrestling. She got to get up there and dance with Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
His idea, you know what he wanted, right?
No.
That was a rib on Dusty, too. What right. he wanted was, he's the common man. He wanted a hot African-American hooker from the street, a street walker.
Right.
Who would come out in a short dress, who was real good looking. He wanted that as a valet, and he offered up that suggestion, and they gave him Sapphire instead.
Yeah.
There again. It was all intended to humble Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
And they can say what they want to say, and he was smart enough, just like Harley Race was smart enough to embrace the King. The King was a rib on Harley Race, because Harley's opinion was, I can drive faster than you, I can drink more beer than you, I can beat you in a fight, I can beat you if you're arm wrestling, I'm the better wrestler. He was the King of wrestling.
And
in Harley's estimation, and they gave him that as a rib, and they gave Dusty all this as to humble him.
And Harley Race, you go on Pro Wrestling Tees today, you can buy, he's making money off the yeah. King gimmick.
Yeah, smart enough to embrace it, and Dusty was smart enough to say, I got it over. I knew what they were doing, and I got it over anyway.
Yeah.
Because I'm that good. That's Dusty's story. Yes, I knew that they were doing it to mess with me. And I took it, and I made it work.
Yeah.
Because I'm Dusty Rhodes, and you can't do anything to stop Dusty Rhodes.
The biggest, not the biggest thing, when Dusty went to WWF, he was wrestling jobbers every week.
Yeah.
Which we had not seen.
Right.
I mean,
by the end, before he left, he was jobbing to Virgil.
Right.
I mean, quick.
How long?
He was doing quick jobs.
How long? So he goes there.
He was there from
88 or 89.
He wasn't there 2 years, I don't think.
Well, he might have been at two WrestleManias, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. It was no more than 3 years. I don't know dates I'm not good with.
Right.
That was the first time that they brought Dustin in.
Yes.
To do the angle with Ted DiBiase. And at the time, Dustin was talking with Lisp. He was the American Dream Jr.
Yeah.
You know, and he was mimicking Dusty, and quickly they abandoned that thing. But he didn't need that.
Somebody was talking about one of the matches. It was one of Dustin's first matches, and just how blown up he gets.
Yeah.
But then, and if I'm skipping ahead, please.
No, I'm fine with
both of them end up back in WCW.
Right.
Where you get the great and Dustin, a great wrestler, a great athlete.
You are skipping a little bit because it's important to note that Dusty was not drawing like they thought he would end up, because their idea was, we can put him on top on the B shows,
yeah,
and draw a crowd, and it really wasn't. Where his story is, I quit, and went back. The other side of the story is, he got fired because he wasn't drawing.
Yeah,
so mostly partly truth, partly fiction.
Right,
it's probably somewhere in between. There. And he goes back to World Championship Wrestling because you have to remember what had been going on over there was the Jim Herd, Bill Watts, Nick Bockwinkel, Ole Anderson debacle.
Yeah.
And them saying, we don't want wrestlers, and they bring in Jim Herd, and Jim Herd wanted to cut everything good about Ric Flair. Jim Herd was, by all accounts, one guys in wrestling that should just not have been there.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, one of the Common Man skits was he was a pizza man. And that was to make fun of Jim Herd, whose only experience had been producing a wrestling show in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And he really didn't have anything to do with it. He's just the guy that had the title of producer. He didn't have anything to do with making the show happen.
Yeah.
And they bring Dusty back in with the I don't know what you call it, the stipulation being that he couldn't be on-air talent.
Yeah.
He would just be the guy behind the scenes because they felt like Dusty had enough to offer creatively.
You're right.
But that if Dusty was in the top spot, that he would hog all the limelight. He agrees to that, and then he puts Dustin on TV.
Yeah.
In the top spot. And people kind of rejected that, even me at the time. And we've talked about it. When I go back and watch some of Dustin's matches from that era, he was better than a lot of people gave him credit for being. Yes. He was not great. And he was not polished at the time. But you can watch him. If you go back and watch those pay-per-views, and you can watch him get better.
Yes.
At what he's doing.
And they were putting him in with good people. Yeah.
He was feuding with Terry Funk and Arn Anderson, and that leads us to one of his last great promos.
Right. Where Dustin's teaming with Arn Anderson against the Stud Stable, and as soon as Arn gets tagged in, Arn DDTs him, joins the Stud Stable. And now Dustin's feuding against the whole Stud Stable by himself. I think there's a run in, and Dusty comes in, and just this.
I mean, he cries during the promo.
Yeah, this is Dusty at his best. Because I know.
Because the crowd now had a good enough break from Dusty.
Yeah.
They still love Dusty. And now I can remember thinking that at the time, when is Dusty going to come help Dustin?
Yeah.
Because I had a break from him.
Yeah.
It had not been Dusty Overload for all these years. He'd had a little break from Dusty. Now I wanted to see him come back.
Right. Just a powerful promo.
Yeah. When he quotes the Shelter from the Storm, the Bob Dylan song, Shelter from the Storm. My son offered up his innocence, and you paid him back in scorn.
Yeah.
Come in, and I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Yeah.
But he doesn't say the shelter. Right. Most people don't know that that's a Bob Dylan quote.
Right.
I could tell by the look on your face that you went, oh, really?
I know that song. I know that song, and now I'm, but there's a part in this promo where when he gets the mic, and the crowd's going nuts because Dusty's back.
Because Dusty, they know Dusty's and everything fixing is, to cut a promo.
And he just holds up his hand.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this before.
Probably have. We'll talk about it again.
It bears repeating.
Yes.
Yeah. He just holds up his hands and this is Dusty, okay? He's unscripted.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to take the good with it. Bad's not the right word. But you know that
the highs with the lows.
Right. And he's like, I want to talk to my son. And
I just need to talk to my son for a minute.
Yeah. And,
He just launches into this incredible. Arn Anderson is a walk behind her, and when you're a walk behind her, the view never changes.
Baby. And he says, Terry Funk is an egg-sucking dog.
Yeah. Well, I want to pull that promo up and watch it now.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
But the
yeah.
great line, you know, my son offered up his innocence, and you paid him back in scorn. To hell with you, Arn Anderson.
He says, the Kennedys were blood. The Earps were blood. The Rhodes are blood. I don't want you to look for another partner.
Yeah. If you can carry this fat, spindly-legged old man, I want to be your partner.
And he holds
his... That's when he holds... Because now everybody is going, it's going to happen. Dusty's going... And he stops him again.
Yeah. Oh,
and
man.
And with the greatest father and son moment...
Oh.
In wrestling history, I'll be hyperbolic and say
it is the. It's number one.
I don't need a handshake. All I need from you is a hug and a kiss to seal the deal.
Baby. And during the promo, you can listen. It was one of those Dusty's biggest selling point was the reality of it.
Yes.
Ever. That's that in hard times, I'd put equally real. You know?
Yeah, that was a real moment because there was real issues between, because he discussed them.
Yeah.
In the promo, there's another part when he said, I was busy trying to be the world champion and I neglected you. And I went out to try to make a movie in Hollywood and I neglected you. And here I am trying to be some corporate cowboy.
Yeah.
And again, I've neglected you. And now I want to make that up to you. And that was very real.
Yeah.
That had happened in their life where there was some animosity from and it would, and I don't know if you want to skip ahead, but it would eventually boil over.
Yeah.
When Dustin decided to marry Terry Runnels. Yeah. I forget Terry's last name. I know it, yeah. But it just went away. Marlena. From yeah, Marlena. Married when he married Terry. There's always been a rule in wrestling that you can mess around with the girls who hang around, but you don't marry them.
Right.
And Dustin married her, and there was an idea by Dusty. I'm not saying it's true or not true. I'm just telling you, I have heard Dusty's position was that Dustin was not the first wrestler that she messed around with.
Right.
And that he shouldn't marry this girl.
Yeah.
And then Dustin would have some substance abuse issues, and they would – it would boil over into Dustin unloading on Dusty about how he'd never been there before.
Yeah.
And he had, who are you to offer up any kind of fatherly advice to me about anything? Cause you've never been there when I needed a father. There again, I'm not speculating. I read Dusty Rhodes's book.
Yeah.
And he didn't go into detail about what was said between him and Dustin. Cause it is very private. And still, even he talks in the book, very hurtful for him. And it was like 10 years that they were apart from one another and didn't speak. And Dusty had the granddaughter that he really didn't get to see. And they were just at a deal one day and Dusty showed up, and Barry Windham, who was like another son to Dusty, even though he was, a lot of people think Dustin and Barry are close in age, but Barry Windham had been a main eventer for 10 years before Dustin Rhodes showed up.
Right.
But they were still really good friends. And he walks in and he said, Dusty's out in the parking lot and he wants to talk to you if you'll talk to him.
Yeah.
And Dusty said, Dustin walks out and they didn't say a word. They just hugged each other.
Yeah.
And they cried. Yeah. And they mended over. Fortunately, before he died, they mended that friendship, mended that relationship, and we're close again.
Yeah,
before he passed, which is great.
Which is great. You got the one of my favorite Hall of Fame inductions.
Yeah,
when Dustin and Cody, induct Dusty, and then the whole angle with Goldust and Stardust and
involving Dusty. Yeah, that was great. I thought they missed the boat with Stardust.
I did too, and it's a shame, Goldust, just in these last few months, I think they were going to go do something with it, and Goldust got hurt.
Just to talk about a great third act in a guy's wrestling career.
Yeah.
I mean, Dustin Rhodes, to come full circle, to get his substance abuse issues under control, to lose the weight, to come back for just really a one-time match against Randy Orton and have one of the matches of the year on Monday Night Raw with Randy Orton.
Yeah.
And it lead to him getting a contract again. And now you're going to see Dustin Rhodes get a backstage position, work at NXT. I think he's already working down at NXT, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so. He's doing some stuff.
And he's a guy that deserves that because he gave a lot to the business. He lost a lot because of the business.
Yeah.
And he got his life back and he got his issues under control. And I'm very, very happy to see Dustin Rhodes because I think he's got something to offer because the guy knows how to have a hell of a match.
He does. He is, you can tell he is his father's son because he's such a great athlete.
Right.
Very believable. And in that promo, Dustin's wearing a hat. I mean, they're almost dressed exactly alike because Dustin's playing up. That's who he is.
Right.
He's Dusty Rhodes Jr. And he's wearing a cowboy hat. And about halfway through the promo, he kind of knocks it off. And I think it just wasn't sitting right. I don't think there was, that was anything planned. Just
no, it was just this great moment where the hat.
He wants to look his father in the eye.
The hat is stopping him from hugging his father as tightly as he wants to. So he gets rid of the hat. Yeah, I remember that moment.
But it was good, and just these, like, you know, if you go back and watch.
But he had some awful rain jackets. Those red and yellow and blue jackets with like cactuses on them, but they were all, but man, did they not fit the 90s? They were like very much. Remember when people, it got real popular, the leather jackets with like the 8-ball on the back or the nine, you know what I mean? You remember that kind of awful? You probably had one.
No, I did not.
With the 9-ball, and they would have just different colored patches of leather.
All right, yeah.
So it kind of fit the time, I guess, but looking back on them, they were awful looking.
I want to go back.
And they call them the natural.
I want to go back and see the match where Goldust and Cody win the tag team belts at the pay-per-view. Yeah. And they're like, that was.
That match?
I think.
That's a great match.
I think that was one of those where.
It was a match of the year contender.
I watched the rest of the pay-per-view, but I was delayed
and just didn't
get to watch it, but that was a good moment, and so maybe during lunch today
you need to see that match. That's a really
we'll
good
go back
match.
And look at that. So we literally covered anything else on Dusty's career, because I want to talk some other things.
No, I mean, because the rest of it, I mean, he went to TNA and he booked TNA kind of unsuccessfully, and then he wound up landing back in WWE with a job where, by all accounts, he was one of the last guys left who stood up to him when they were wanting to do stupid stuff. And it's a shame to see that last of that generation that would stand up to Vince McMahon and say, no, I don't think that, or stand up to Triple H or stand up to Stephanie McMahon and say, no, here's a better idea. It's kind of sad to see that generation gone.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that there's anybody else there that's going to do that. But clearly, based on the outpouring of the people at NXT, he was doing great work helping them learn to cut promos and find their voice. And you know, I think a guy who could really teach you. I remember saying to you when he died, the whole world will probably feel a little more charismatic, because it just a whole bunch of charisma just got redistributed into the universe.
So
for a day or two, everybody felt a little more charismatic because Dusty wasn't with us anymore.
So two questions I want to ask. I look back, Dusty had so many good rivalries. Terry Funk, obviously Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard. The Horsemen in general, DiBiase, that was a good one.
Speaking, he also feuded with the Honky Tonk Man
for a
little while. And if you've never seen Dusty Rhodes sing Dusty Be Good, then you need to see that. It is not easy to find.
And
it used to be on YouTube, and now there's like a bad clip of it, I think. Did you watch it when I sent it to you? You probably did.
I watched part of it,
there. You watched part of it.
Wait, when did you send that to me?
I thought I sent it to you. Maybe I didn't. But if you've never seen Dusty
I watched him sing Johnny Be Good with David Allan Coe. He came. David Allan Coe's doing one of the pre or post Bash concerts. And Dusty Rhodes comes out
Well, he comes out on like the WWF's talk show thing that they used to do. Yeah. And he sang Dusty Be Good. And it's classic. It is what you think it would be. It's Dusty and tie dyes, swirling the Big Boss Man's nightstick, singing Dusty Be Good. It's you just have to see it to believe it.
But was there anybody during his career, one of his contemporaries, that he didn't get a chance to feud with?
Well, first of all, you forgot Superstar Billy Graham, who was a big.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And Eddie Graham, Mike Graham, big feuds. The Sheik, Abdullah the Butcher, and he feuded with most of the big names.
Yeah. So
who his contemporaries that we didn't get to see him feud with, is that?
Yeah, or who? And then the second question was what current superstars
I don't know that there's anybody today that's charismatic enough to stand in a ring with Dusty Rhodes and not be overshadowed. I really think he's that big a star.
Yeah.
Either that or he would elevate them and they would have to be a little more charismatic. I think Seth Rollins could supply the kind of movement that Dusty would.
I was thinking that same thing.
He could generate a lot of movement in the ring. And he could play that corporate, whatever, that corporate shield guy to Dusty's American Dream. He could do it. Triple H, I think, would have had good matches. But Triple H, he's a guy. When I think of Triple H's matches, he's a mechanic, man. He really is. He's going to have good matches with anybody.
Yeah.
But not necessarily great matches.
I agree.
With too many people. Generally, when he has a great match, it's because his opponent is great.
Yeah.
Not because he's great.
Yeah.
But always has 3.5-4-star matches with anybody he goes in the ring with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Triple H could have a good match with Dusty Rhodes.
And that would have been a good – Dusty playing the Steve Austin role to Triple H's authority role.
Right, right.
That would have been that would have been good.
But I don't think Triple H could have hung with Dusty on promos. So.
No.
I don't think there's anybody that can hang with him on promos.
Not today.
There's just not.
No.
I hate to say this because I don't like the guy. But CM Punk could have had a good feud with Dusty Rhodes.
Right.
With you're the straight edge, whatever, I'm better than you because I eat healthy and I don't eat meat and I don't drink beer. And Dusty Rhodes is the guy who eats pizza and drinks beer and chews tobacco. And I think that would have been a good dynamic.
Yeah.
And I think they could have had real good matches
together. Yeah, yeah. I think Punk could have sold really, well for
him. And he could have hung with Dusty Rhodes on the microphone.
Yeah.
Like him or not.
I know that's painful for you to say, but I agree with you.
But I think he could have hung with Dusty on the microphone.
Yeah.
I don't think if you put that feud in 85, it would have worked. But in 2008 or 2009.
Right.
If Dusty coming to WWE now, it would have worked. Punk going to 85 Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
Nobody would have believed.
No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to. I would have loved to see a Dusty Rhodes Kevin Owens feud. Back and forth on
Are you to call yourself the American Dream? I'm the American Dream. I learned to speak. I taught myself to speak English. And
right.
I did this, and I, you know what? I can see that.
Yeah. They would have put him against Rusev, at some point. And then Rusev turned face. Rusev
would have turned and became good. Speaking of Rusev, is there not the Lana-Dolph Ziggler chemistry? Like, is that not the worst chemistry between a man and a woman you've ever seen? Golly, there is. I mean, it's obvious that she don't want to be kissing that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she likes real men. She's into Rusev. Clearly, she likes real men,
I just
maybe I need to give her a call. She seems to like the burly.
I don't think we need to go there.
Caveman type. She seems to be into that.
If Lana walked in this door right now, she's not coming to my end of the table.
No.
I'll agree with you on that.
Right. I would say if most women walked in that door right now, they're not coming down to your end of the table. You can have short and stumpy or long and strong. Which one you going with?
Listen, I've heard every short joke in the world, but Mark's delivery and originality, listen, I can live with that.
I take it to the level of art form. Insults are one of my things.
Like I'm when a little kid, I was telling you at camp, a lot of these kids, hey, you're short and fat. Well, no, duh, Sherlock.
Yeah.
I poop bigger than you.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
you're ugly. And your mama dresses you funny.
Yeah, but I can lose weight.
Yeah, that's right.
You always going to be ugly.
You always going to have them awkward looking feet. See, that's how you get into somebody's head. It's easy to point out short and stumpy. Say something about their fingers.
Yeah. Oh.
And it'll drive them nuts because they'll go, wait, and they'll start obsessing about their fingers. That's how you drive somebody nuts.
Yes, yes. You know. Listen.
Well, at least I don't have a bump right between my eyes. What? And they'll start feeling for it, and they'll go find a mirror. And even if there ain't a bump, they'll see something, and they'll go, man.
Or you know? At least
and then
I don't
start
have
messing with it and make it worse.
At least I don't have spinach between my teeth.
Right. Stuff like that. That's how you tear people's nerves up.
You say that on Monday at camp. That kid's still rubbing his teeth with his finger on Friday.
That's right. That's right. Well, maybe you need to see a dentist about those yellow teeth.
Oh! It's like when you do that, you cross the line. But you calling me short and fat, right. Totally legal.
Yeah, that's fine. But I said something about your yellow teeth, and all of a sudden you got your feelings hurt.
It's like that time a Mr. Arnold, first name of Burke.
Careful now. He could probably still beat you up.
No, he comes up to me, and I forget what we're talking about outside at the patio. Every good school's got a patio that during lunch you can go out and stand on the patio.
And you do so at your own risk.
Yes,
you're not
you
one of the tough guys. Yeah.
And we were talking and joking about something, and I was just being Heath and joking about something. And he got in my face and says, you know, you're a fruitcake. And I just said, oh, I ain't the only one. And he really got in my face and said, are you calling me a fruitcake? And I said, no, I just said I wasn't the only one. Of course, I was calling him. I just said, I'm not the only one. And he kind of backed off. But
so your story is Burke Arnold backed off from you?
My story is...
I just want to make sure I understand
my
that
story is I went home alive that day.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my story. Okay. That I was smart enough to know what to say, but I was smart enough to know what not to say.
He was a cool guy, man. He was a cool guy. But, I mean, I used to talk to him all the time.
I don't know what it was. Like, where are we going? But, he just had my number and did not, for some reason, did not like me. And I wanted him to like me.
Of course you did. He was the like one.
But
he had that reputation for being a guy that beat you up. Never. I always got along with him.
Right.
We always got along. For some reason, he liked me. And I think I made him laugh a couple of times. And
there you go. That's the way to somebody's heart right
and
there.
And he did. I mean, I remember he sat behind me in a class, and we would cut up, and he thought I was funny. And he never messed with me.
And how tall were you?
He hit me one time, and I no-sold it.
Oh, man, you were good at that.
And he was like, did that hurt? And I said, nah, really wasn't all that bad. And that was it. He was like, I like you. Okay. And we got along.
Isn't it crazy how, like, especially when you got to high school and your classes became, you weren't in the same classes with the same people all day.
Right.
It was a little more diversified. And you would end up in a class with, like, somebody totally out of your social group.
Yeah.
That you hadn't had a whole lot of interaction with. And it only took, like, you'd say a couple things and you'd be on their good side.
Right. And remember, like, when you would go, like, on a field trip, and I always say, and you would be paired up with some girl,
yeah.
And she was good looking, but she never gave you the time of day.
Yeah.
And then over the course of the weekend, y'all would become really close.
Yeah.
And you would just know she's into me.
Yeah.
She
and
likes
you think
me.
You got a chance.
And you think you got a chance. And then you get back to school Monday, and it's like she doesn't know who you are again.
It is. That, you know, yes.
Because everybody got, because it's such a, you got back to your social groups and, oh, yeah, that's right. He's one of those nerds. I'm not supposed to like him.
Band,
I'm supposed to like this guy.
Band trips were the same way. You'd go on a band trip just for like to a football game.
Uh-huh.
And you would sit around a couple of people. So it's our show. We talk about what we want to. So this one time we're playing Truth or Dare, which that's going to happen.
You get a couple of kids together, somebody's going to do some truth.
Tracy Sanders, who's a recurring character on our show.
That's right.
And in our lives.
A recurring character in my life.
He dares this beautiful girl, who at the time was doing some modeling. At least that's what I'm going to sell it.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I dare you to kiss Heath.
How far in advance did y'all work that out?
I panicked.
Oh, no.
Panicked. I mean, I've got this opportunity.
Right.
Blew it. I said, you know what? You can kiss my foot if you want to. And I was just joking. Before I could take it back, before I could... Tracy has agreed to the change in the stipulations. My foot has been kissed, the moment gone forever. That was 25 years ago. Still regret it.
Who was the girl?
No comment.
Well, give me an initial.
Last name English.
Okay.
So you weren't thinking it was just some Joe Schmo.
No. I mean, she was very, very, very pretty.
She kissed my foot.
God, you are an idiot.
I am an idiot. Because let me tell you.
I would have done the same thing.
I
wouldn't have known.
What do I do? Because she was in that other. She was older than us. She was in.
Yeah.
And,
you know. I would have. If she had leaned in, the second that I felt her breath my lips, before she even kissed me.
No better way to end a Dusty Road show than with a minute of woos from Ric Flair. If you didn't know, Mark and I, we just love Dusty Rhodes. He was great.
Yeah.
That's the wrestling we grew up with.
And I will say this, because I know you're fixing to head into yours, so talk to us on here and do that.
Right.
So let me say this. My eulogy for Dusty Rhodes is very simple. I met Dusty Rhodes one time, and it was one of the highlights of my life, and it's one of the only times I've ever been starstruck and didn't know what to say. And Ole Anderson was in the room, and Dusty Rhodes looks and says, "This guy would have made a hell of an Anderson," to Ole Anderson. I understand that Dusty was just doing his job.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember saying that. Ole Anderson doesn't remember him saying that. But for 30 seconds, Dusty Rhodes spoke to me.
Yeah.
And he made me feel important. And that was the genius of Dusty Rhodes.
Yes,
that
sir.
Whether you were sitting on the front row, sitting on the last row, whether you were watching TV at home, whether you were in an arena at your house, whether you were standing right there between him and one of his hated rivals.
Yeah.
For just a minute, Dusty knew how to talk directly to you, and that's why he drew money.
Yeah.
He was not an acrobat.
No.
He didn't cut a bunch of flips.
No.
He didn't have 5-star matches.
No.
But he drew money because people believed him.
Yeah.
It's all about getting a dream and being somebody. And he had that message.
Yeah.
He come out of the ditch at 8 years old after T.C. Lee told him, "There's an American dream out there and you need to go chase it."
Yeah.
And he entertained me and he made me laugh. And he made me cry.
Yes.
And he made me want to watch him wrestle. Never had a 5-star classic that I've seen.
Mm-mm.
Still better than CM Punk and Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Always will be. You may not agree that his matches are as great as theirs, and that's fine, but he drew more money than they ever did.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
People are not ever going to be quoting. As much as you may like that pipe bomb promo, it ain't going to be 30 years from now people are still quoting CM Punk promos.
Yeah, because it's like 10 minutes long.
Yeah. Dusty Rhodes in 3 minutes creates a promo that 30, 40 years later, people still go back and watch once a month on YouTube. And they know the words to his promo. And they repeat his promo when they talk about that. The behind is just a little big. Belly's just a little big. My hand's touching your hand. Dusty Rhodes is the cold-blooded sausage maker. I'm the hip maker, the record breaker. I make your back crack, your liver quiver. I make your knees freeze. If you can't dig this mess, you at the wrong address. We talked about all of them at the beginning of the show. Yeah. All these lines, the biggest sports attraction of our day. Offered up my innocence. You paid me back in scorn. It'll never be over.
Yeah.
All these classic things that people remember Dusty Rhodes saying. Name one other wrestler that people quote as frequently as they do Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest compliment that I can give him. Is with bad hair and a bad body and a speech impediment, he became the greatest promo cutter in the history of wrestling.
Bar none.
The most charismatic wrestler in the history of wrestling.
Yes.
I don't care. You can't tell me. The Rock was great at promos, but he was great at reading somebody else's lines that they'd written for him.
Yes.
So he's not in the conversation as far as I'm concerned. As far as a man that could go out and ad-lib a promo, nobody can touch Dusty Rhodes.
Right.
Bar none, nobody is in the same class as Dusty Rhodes when it comes to cut. That's the reason that they hired him to teach a promo cutting class.
Right. Here's the thing about Dusty Rhodes. This is how I can sum up the man and his career. I'm 40 years old. When I watch, and I'm making a confession here, when I watch the Hard Times promo, there's a point I look around the room because I'm going to reach out toward the screen.
Right.
And my hand is going to touch his hand. Right. Because when I watch Dusty, listen, this is what's magical about it. When I watch Dusty Rhodes, I am not a 40-year-old man. I'm a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
He just reminds you, this show may be called the Double Dropkick Show, but nobody symbolizes the wrestling we grew up with more than Dusty Rhodes.
No.
So, I mean, that's really...
That's just because we couldn't call the podcast the American Dream Show.
Right. Right.
Honestly, I mean...
Or the Bionic Elbow.
I mean, we called it... we happened to say Double Dropkick one day.
And it
thought that's a good name for the show. But I'm sure if we had thought about it longer than we did, we would have figured out a way to pay homage to Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, and part of the real, what hooked us on wrestling was... the Rock and Roll Express match, but
true. But one of the first things I remember seeing was Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. And Dusty Rhodes was the same thing. I've said about the Road Warriors. When you would go, you would hope they would be there. It was the same thing with Dusty.
Right.
You hoped he would be there, and it wasn't the pop, the entrance or the exit. It was you knew during that match he was going to pull you in.
Right.
And he was going to need you.
Nobody. With the exception of maybe Hulk Hogan, nobody did that, take a beating for 15 minutes and then make a comeback better than Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
With the exception of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
I'm fair about things.
Yeah.
I have to give credit where it's due. And Hulk Hogan took that to the level of art.
Yeah, he did.
Nobody did that better than Hogan.
Yeah.
But Dusty did it real. When Dusty fired up, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Good stuff. Listen, we have been talking about the wrestling we grew up with. We want to hear your take on Dusty Rhodes. A lot of great comments about him still on our Facebook group, which is The Wrestling You Grew Up With. We're nearing 2,000 members. By the time you listen to this, probably over 2,000 members. Some great new members, great conversations, almost overwhelming some of the conversation. Overwhelming in the number of threads, the comments on the threads. Some of the threads over 100 comments, and so that's all you guys. We really do appreciate it. We try to be. I think what differentiates us is we do lean heavy toward the wrestling we grew up with and what we talk about, but we try to run a group where there's not a lot of rudeness, not a lot of name calling, not a lot of just over the top profanity and things like that. We try to keep it pretty simple, like wrestling is.
The profanity thing, just so people know, that's your rule, not mine.
Right, because like to me, like I want fans of all ages to be welcome in the group, and there's some of them where it's just so over the top, and so it's just no need. I mean, like, act like you talk to people, and I don't. We don't need to go there, but
I agree. I think you got to have a little bit of, I don't know, self control about yourself. I mean,
right?
I've had people ask me. I hear you talk in real life. and you cuss a, sometimes more than I should. Sometimes I don't cuss much. Just depending on what my mood is.
Yeah.
And they'll say, but I've never seen you do that on Facebook.
Yeah.
On your personal page or anything. I mean, you never will.
Yeah.
Because I don't want that hanging out there. That
right.
If you can't, I don't know. That's just me. Yeah, I cuss a lot, but I don't put it on my social media.
Stuff. Right. Right.
Because I mean, I'm smarter than that.
Yeah. 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 And for me, on social media, it's already so easy to misinterpret what people say.
Is it really?
If you throw in profanity, to me, that just escalates everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no need for that. Yeah,
there's no need for it, man.
But you need to go doubledropkick.com. That is our website where you can find all of our episodes. Click on a banner. We've got different things going on. There's banners on the sides. For the Crockett Promotions documentary that was done, which is great, by the way. Audible trial, where you can get a free 1 month trial with audible.com. You get a free free book, a free audio book with that. And then even if you cancel the trial, you get to keep your free book, your free download.
There you go.
Plus, we get a kickback from you just signing up.
Right.
You don't have to pay them a dime, but you know you can support the show because we don't have any income streams. This is all out.
Right.
Go. We're just trying to cover our cost.
Right.
Okay. Let's be honest. We're trying to retire doing this. I mean, if that could happen, that'd be great.
I mean, if it's gonna happen to anybody, I'd just assume it happened to me and you.
Right. I mean, if we could get to the point where we're doing this from a boat.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
In the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
That would be
while
awesome.
While bronze beauties feed us grapes.
And by bronze beauties, he means our wife. Or not. But yeah, so just, you know, click on a banner. We also want you to check out Golden Corner Wrestling. It's a new wrestling group we're involved in, putting on our first show August 15th in Seneca, South Carolina. Mark and I are doing the commentary for that. We would love to meet you. Oh, sorry. I would love to meet you. If you come out to the show, I will talk to you. Mark's going to say, I'm with my family. This is family time. I ain't going to talk to you. But it's going to be great, and that stuff's going to be
on. If I'm at a wrestling show, here's what's going to happen in real life. Just like in wrestling, you're going to meet the baby face and find out he's a jerk, and the heel's going to be the guy who's standing there and take pictures with you. That's what's going to happen.
I don't know. I think people are going to meet us and be like, man, that guy really is that short in real life. That's what's going to happen. So just love to hear you. I want to talk to you on Twitter. I'm at Heath Mulliken, and Mark
at the DDK show.
Use the hashtag snotbubble. Hashtag marking out with Mark. Ask you questions. We just want to talk wrestling with you. Talk about stuff.
Talk about stuff.
But we love it. We love wrestling. And
clearly.
You know, I thought about the other day.
I love your your overstatements and your understatements. I like it when you say, we just love wrestling.
Listen. The month of August, it hit me yesterday. You're off work 3 weekends in August, and we're going to be at wrestling events together all three of those weekends.
Well, yeah.
Fan Fest, well, for part of it. Yeah. I know where you're going. Then we're going to be at the Golden Corner Show, and then we're going to Ring of Honor Show
together.
Is that
like the 29th?
29th.
Yeah. You know, what's the main event? Do you know?
Don't know. They haven't announced the card yet.
Atlanta?
North Trade Center. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. How far away is that?
Not quite 2 hours.
Okay.
So excited for that.
Is Drake going with us?
Drake is going with us. And Alan McAllister, his son Will, will have a good crowd, good crew.
I love hanging around with people's kids.
Listen, you don't even like hanging around people. Don't blame it on the kids. Leave the kids out.
I'm bringing
my
puppy.
Bruiser Brody.
Yep. That is my dog's name, by the way, Bruiser Brody. And when he's a bit bigger, he's going to be the new official mascot. But I got to wait till he's old enough to get some good mean-looking pictures. So.
Yes, yes.
I'll slap him in the mouth, piss him off, and he'll show his teeth, and I'm going to snap some pictures of him. I'm just kidding. I'm not really going to slap my dog in the mouth. Lord, if you ain't figured out by now that I'll say things.
Listen, everybody thinks if anything has ruined your reputation, it has been this dog.
True.
Mark's true. Posting all these pictures of this sweet, adorable puppy. Of oh, look at this little guy. Look at this. Like,
I told you my wife got mad. She didn't get mad there again because she didn't care because it's my money. She said, I can't believe you just paid that much money for a bag of dog food.
Yeah.
It's bison and venison. Taste of the wild dog food is actually real meat. It's not like all the filler and stuff yeah. that you get him. It's all protein.
Yeah.
It's based on the diet of a wolf. What a wolf would eat. And it's intended to help your dog grow up and get big.
Yeah.
And develop muscles and things like that. And that's what I'm feeding him. And she's like, did you really just spend that much money on a bag of dog food? I'm like, yep, I sure did. And you are right. He is killing my gimmick.
I will say this. A dog named Bruiser Brody, if you did slap him in the mouth, he's going to no-sell it.
Oh, yeah. And he does because he's mean.
Really?
He's a biter, man. Yeah, oh, he's a biter.
You better break him.
Yeah, I'm breaking him. Yeah. I bite him back. If he bites me, I bite him back.
Where do you bite him?
I don't really bite him. But I mean, like when he bites, I keep my fingers in his mouth and
oh.
You know what I mean? Like I fight back with him.
Gotcha.
Maybe which is I don't know how to raise a dog. But yeah, like we just
Bruiser Brody, the great social experiment of the Double Drop Kick Show.
Yeah, I know if anybody knows, I don't actually bite my dog back there again.
I have bitten a dog back before.
But, like, they just go through this stage when they're little of yeah. mouthing everything.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line between teaching him what's an acceptable bite and what's not an acceptable. Like, he yeah. drew blood biting me the other day.
Oh, my.
And, like, it is a fine line that you walk with them to teach them it's okay to put your mouth
yeah.
on me, but it's not okay to put pressure down.
Yeah.
And he, because he's a pit bull.
Yeah.
And it is a fine line between, like, I want him to know when it's not okay to bite.
Yeah.
So I kind of have let him mouth me a little bit on yeah. my hands, and sometimes he puts too much pressure down because I'm trying to teach him that's okay and that's not.
Yes.
Because you read so much, and I'm sure somebody's listening to this, and they're going to be like, this guy's raising a killer. But what I've read is if you never let him learn –
right.
Where not to bite a person and how not to bite a person. If they ever do bite, they put a lot of force in.
Yeah.
But if you've taught them, don't bite down this hard, then if they ever bite, they don't usually bite as hard.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Listen, I'll tell you this. I was your guinea pig for the power bomb. I ain't going to be your guinea pig. Hey, tell me if this dog bites too hard.
No, he's biting me. And I mean, I know... And I'm training him not to. That's what I'm saying. It's not a breed thing. All puppies bite.
Right. They're going to chew on something.
They chew on something.
Yeah.
And if I give him bones and stuff, he's fine. But occasionally he'll get in my lap, and the next thing you know, he's turned around biting my elbows and my thumbs. And yeah. I'll hear his jaws snap. You can hear him when he claps his jaws. I mean, he's got a bite on him, man. He's got some bite pressure. And I'm just working on breaking it right now. And I'm trying to break it without being mean to him.
Yeah.
Anybody can slap a dog around make it do what you want him to do. Right. I'm not going to do that to him.
Right. You're not going to teach
him. Yeah, I'm not going to abuse him. I mean, I want to teach him this is acceptable and this behavior is okay and it leads to reward and this behavior leads to you being sit back down on the floor and you don't get my affection.
Kind of like life.
My affection is my dog's reward.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I reward him for good behavior.
Yeah.
If he's not acting right, he doesn't get my affection.
How's the house training coming to the dog?
That's pretty good. There again, he's still a puppy. So if you don't take him out every 2 hours, he ain't holding it.
Right.
He's going to go in the house. But as long as I take him out, he's fine. I got him crate trained.
Yeah.
So generally, I feed him in the crate. And leave him in there for 30 minutes and then take him outside and he goes to the bathroom. And there's no problem.
I was crate trained, so that's
I bet you were. That's why that stunted your growth. Somebody was giving you cigarettes when you was 3 or 4 months old.
That's why I don't like.
How many cigarettes did you smoke when you was a kid?
That's why I don't like this. Hey, this might be the most diverse and eclectic podcast episode ever, where we celebrate the career of Dusty Rhodes and also give dog training tips.
No, I'm not giving tips. I don't know how to train one.
We do know how not to play truth or dare now.
Yeah, that's right. If somebody dares a good-looking girl to kiss you, don't stop it from happening.
Yes, yes. Go with the flow. So anyway, go to all those places, Double Drop Tick, download the episodes, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, various places. Find us, download us. That helps us. And, you know, we just look forward to talking more wrestling with you. We're looking forward to Fan Fest coming up. And matter of fact, it may have already passed by the time you hear this episode.
Yeah, I guess it will.
Man, I'm getting excited.
Yeah, you're going to have a fun couple hours.
So, hey, as always, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.